Welcome to MGO Podcast 4.0, where we break down everything. The offense, the defense, the special teams, the Big Ten, Ace's shirt, and Ace's ability to not be afraid when he's in a press box and other people are running around. And we'll talk about that later. So, Ace, duck and cover, man.
Yeah.
If you weren't following the high school games last Saturday on Twitter, you are not me, because I had about four or five different people live tweeting six different games. And there was a scare. There were two scares. Like Heiko hit the deck.
Yeah, Heiko had to take cover real quick.
Yeah, to take cover.
Yeah.
So what was that?
Yeah, just in the middle of a play, all of a sudden, you know, I'm up in the press box and you look out to our right and we're at Wayne State, which is probably a good thing to say to kind of give some context here. And all of a sudden, just in the middle of a play, just this wave of people comes sprinting across the field, like knocking over fences, just going all out, just booking it. And
so there was some sort of scuffle,
a bit of a commotion, I guess. A little scuffle. And so I guess the police said afterward that it was just a fight near the entrance and somebody may or may not have threatened to or actually pulled a gun, but no shots were fired.
I imagine that the gun came out if people were going to react that strongly.
You would think.
Because that's like a visual thing.
And the police were not confirming or denying the presence of a gun, which usually means that a gun was present.
And this happened again.
And then 5 minutes later, it happened again. And each time they stopped the game, and both times teams just laid flat on their stomachs on the field. And it was very, very strange and a little scary. But both times it just kind of blew over after a few minutes. But the second time, they took anybody under 18 who was not sitting in a seat was gone. They had to leave. The whole Brother Rice student section apparently left as a group. And the stands really started to empty out a little bit, and the people who were still there were not really cheering much. It was a completely bizarre atmosphere for most of the second half, because it was one of the more exciting high school football games I've been to. It was a huge matchup. It was a close game the whole way through, and nobody was very excited at the end. Everybody just wanted to get the hell out of there.
Wow, it's like when you get entire like soccer team's fan base is banned from a game, and they have to play in front of nobody.
Yes, it was very, very strange.
So you wanted a polo shirt, but maybe I should get you a vest.
I can do the vest over the under the polo shirt.
That's true. You can multitask there. The other thing before we actually start talking about some football is you are wearing an angry Iowa running back hating God shirt from Blackheart Gold Pants.
You know, I think it's good to spread awareness. Make sure everybody knows
really,
about the dangers of playing.
It's really awesome. Like, I'm looking at this and I'm going to buy one now.
It's an incredible shirt.
It's really. Yeah. I had no idea that the lightning bolts coming out of the god's head actually had like reasons that people had left the team on them.
I think that might be the best part of the show.
And it's just totally inexplicable to most people. But I was commenting on Blackheart Gold Pants about like the origin of the thing, because it always comes up.
Yeah.
And they said that like I was going to draw it back to us. So I hope that the safeties don't start going down in flames, because then it will all be your fault, Ace.
Yes, and so. I will have to burn this shirt. And,
yes.
And it'll be a sad day, because I really like this shirt.
Yeah, it's a cool shirt. Anyway, so football is now basically like it's football, man.
Yeah, we're here. I just went to five games this weekend.
I know. Like I went to the open practice on Saturday, and they had like a very limited spring game type thing where they would actually run plays, but nobody actually got tackled. And I was at some point, like five or six plays into this, I was just like, "This is so good!" Like I'm just so this is football.
And
it wasn't even real football, but that was like before I started doing the blog. Like the entire month of August, I would just listen to the Victors in my car when I did the commute, and. It was the longest month in history, and now that I'm doing the blog, it is not the case, because I've got the season preview to do, so it's like having a term paper due. But that was just pure, like, football is coming giddiness.
Yes.
Without feeling that I have to write 50,000 words the next week.
And at least the term paper has a hell of a payoff.
Well, thank you. Anyway, so this is our season preview podcast. We are going to go run a little bit longer, because we figured football. And we're going to talk offense and defense. We're going to break down the position groups in an admittedly superficial fact because we are talking on the radio, but you know, you're in a car or whatever. So what else are you going to do? Then we're going to talk to Jamie about the Big Ten with a focus on Michigan's schedule, and hopefully we'll get some predictions at the end.
Yeah.
So let's do it.
Let's do it.
So we'll start off with the offense because I don't think you can start off talking about Michigan football without talking about Denard. He's on the cover of every magazine, including ours, and he is Denard. And the thing that I want to see from him is fewer interceptions.
I think that's what we're all looking
for. Is that a controversial take? No?
I don't believe so. But.
Okay. So I've been looking at this, and I remember the last time I looked at this, Football Study Hall put together a list of 100 quarterbacks, the top 100 quarterbacks in terms of passing yards per game. And they ranked them by interception rate. And Denard was 84th. And that was as a sophomore. And then I went back and I looked at that post and I put Denard's interception rate from 2011 into that. And he was 99th. He was better than Boo Jackson of Ohio, but nobody else.
Boo
Jackson. And he was behind Ja'Cory Harris. He was behind Stephen Garcia.
Oh, boy.
So interceptions were a problem. I have good news is that the interception rate dropped off after the Michigan State game. So there's a pretty clear breaking point in terms of Denard's performance, and it comes after the Michigan State trash tornado game. And you can see it in the interception rate, which dropped from 7%, which is worse than Bo Jackson, to 4.2%, which is still
significantly better than Bo Jackson.
But very, very bad.
Yes.
And you can also see it in the UFRs. So his downfield success rate, which is like the primary metric that we track for quarterbacks, got a lot better. And his mistakes were still too big. And I think that has a lot to do with Borges' offense, but he got better. So there's this narrative of improvement that we can see through for a lot of players last year. Denard's one of them. Will Heininger's one of them. Mm-hmm. Jake Ryan. I mean, these guys all got better. In terms of coaching, I think we can expect improvement from Denard. It's just that, are we going to see that in the stats now that Junior Hemingway is not here? Answer the question.
And that's you know, I think a lot of that depends on how viable Devin Gardner is as a wide receiver.
You know, rumor is it's very, very viable.
And yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
So,
You know, I don't think Denard's ever going to be a guy who doesn't have a couple throws every game where you clutch your head and go, why? But I still think, I mean, you mentioned kind of the turning point of Michigan State last year, and that was both a turning point for him in terms of getting more comfortable in the offense, but also Al Borges starting to tailor it more towards
right.
Denard Robinson.
Except for the Iowa game. But in that game, when they went, they had no yards, and then they went to a shotgun passing attack, which actually moved the ball down the field twice,
got
them one touchdown and got them within a Junior Hemingway, like hair's breadth of a second. So you could see that maybe he was getting somewhat comfortable when he was in the shotgun and he was not, you know, turning around and doing something that is antithetical to his very nature.
Yes. So I think the numbers should get better.
I mean,
how much better they'll get, see. But
So there's the burgeoning Wolverine star school of thought, which is just like Denard is Denard, and I get that. At the practice, there was one throw that Denard got a little bit of pressure, and he sort of like hopped up and jumped and then threw it way behind his intended receiver. And it's just like, oh, man, come on, Denard. And I just think that, you know, it's 1 year is not enough to fix this. And this is, you know, whenever I think about the fact that they had to put him out there as a freshman, it just kills me. It's just the worst thing I can ever think of. But, you know, Borges always talks about Cade McNown. And Cade McNown, we're not going to get a Cade McNown thing going here, but he went from the worst efficiency quarterback in the Pac-10 to the best in the nation.
So. And then went right back to being terrible, which means you can put a lot of stock into Borges' impact, I think, there.
Well, you know, he had a revealing quote when he was talking about the freshman wide receivers. He's like, they're essentially learning what's an NFL passing game. And the difference between an NFL passing game and Rich Rodriguez's passing game...
night and day.
Night and day.
I think it's fair to say.
I mean, yes. So I think, can we expect like a freshman to sophomore level improvement here? I know he's a junior. I know he's been around the block, but he's never really been in a system like this.
Yeah, a senior, correct? Denard.
That's what I mean. Okay. But
You know, freshman to sophomore, well, considering the leap that Denard took from his freshman to sophomore year, I think it might be a little much to expect that large of a leap, but...
Well, I didn't mean like that.
But in terms of gaining such a greater understanding of the offense and getting more comfortable, I think we'll see something coming close to that.
Yeah.
I think the interceptions, you know, it hopefully won't be 15 again or whatever it was last year, which was far too many. But, you know, it might hang in the neighborhood of 10 or a little bit less. But as long as he's going under an interception a game, that's still, unfortunately, a pretty large improvement.
Yeah. And then, I mean, we're not even talking about the Gardner interceptions. I mean, he threw two terrible interceptions. Yeah. Was there just one? Maybe it was just one. But it was very bad.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it.
And he also had the play where he was running back and forth.
Yeah. But that was like fourth and he had, I mean, whatever. So, quarterback, yay.
It's Denard.
So, running back, it's basically the same cast of characters as last year, minus Mike Shaw. But Mike Shaw was marginalized at the end of the year anyway. I mean, Toussaint's going to be suspended for the first game.
I think we'll see.
I mean, he hasn't announced it, but it's just such a Brady Hoke thing to do.
Like, yeah, I'd be very surprised if he played.
Yeah,
it's a DUI. You gotta sit him.
You know, there's 11 more games after that, possibly 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Toussaint is going to be maybe not the best back in the league simply because he won't have the opportunities of a Bell or a Monty Ball, but I think he'll be up there in terms of yards per carry.
I'd agree. I thought, other than Monte Ball, he was probably the best looking back in the Big Ten last year.
Yeah, and man, I just went back and I looked at all this stuff, and there's this one run again he had against Nebraska, which was just, it was Mike Hart reincarnated. And like, he's never...
fast.
I was about to say that, actually. Like, he's never going to be the guy who breaks a lot of tackles just by running through him like Hart used to do, but he is butt fast, you know? Like, that Fred Jackson hyperboleism is actually pretty accurate. Like, he can juke guys in a phone booth, he can get to the outside, and then he just jets.
Yeah.
And man, if he can just pick up the blocking a little bit, he was kind of crappy back there pass blocking, and if he could maybe make more of an impact out of the backfield, I mean, I could see him not coming back next year. Like,
I could see that too.
We know that his backstory is pretty rough. I mean, his dad is in jail for stabbing his mom's boyfriend or husband or something at one of his high school games.
Yeah.
So obviously this is probably not a family that has a yacht.
No.
But I think he'll be in that range where it's like, he'll be a second round pick and he'll probably be out the door, which is going to be unfortunate, but at least we'll get that kind of production out of him. And he has to remain healthy, of course. Like, that's been the thing that has dogged him his entire career.
Yeah. And he managed to do it last year. So
mostly, I mean, he missed the Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
And you know, you have to think that the reason he got two carries against Michigan State was because he was not Hale.
Yeah.
I mean, unless like it was just a complete brain fart, but I can't imagine that. Like,
although I couldn't imagine a lot of our game strategy there. So
yeah, man, that's going to be interesting to see. Like, if there's any of those games this year where it's just like clear that they tried something and it
really did not work.
Really, really bad idea. And because they didn't know the players that well. And, I mean, they thought they could go man-ball Iowa. And it was a reasonable thing to think because Minnesota had just done it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like, well, we played Minnesota and I saw how that went. So I don't know.
I think Borges's familiarity with the team and the fact that they now know they probably got a set of several plays that they know they can go to. And just having those in place where they can go, this team runs this very well.
Yeah,
they'll be able to, if they have a bad game plan, just go, all right, we're going to go back to the stuff that actually works.
So,
but you thought that last year probably too.
Are you a Rawls believer? Is he, how much better than Mark Ingram is Thomas Rawls? Just a little bit or like a lot?
I would go with a lot.
His
biceps are very large. That's how I judge running back.
They are. And he's got a tattoo that says Black Beast on it in French.
He does.
And he thinks it means achieve your goals and dreams. Which is... it's very charming. I like that.
It is. He was very charming at media day, actually. He was fun to talk to. But, I don't know. I don't think he's got much of a ceiling above, like, can churn out 4 yards a carry, but absolutely destroy somebody while he's doing it. Because he is a block. He does run angry. Like, he is a very solidly built back. Not a lot of wiggle, not a great deal of speed, but I think he fits better with a different offensive line than what we're going to put out there.
See, you say that, and when I saw Rawls run in the spring game, like his two runs where he actually broke some tackles and made some plays were out of the shotgun, and it kind of looked like he was being Brandon Miner. And I've liked that aspect of the spread where you can get this big back and you can just get him moving straight upfield on that belly play and then see what happens, because it's really tough for that guy who's on the outside to redirect and tackle you. Especially if you're Brandon Miner or you're Thomas Rawls, because, I mean, they don't have momentum, and you're just going to plow.
And if you're trying to hit Rawls without any momentum going, he's going to run right through you.
Yeah, so I mean, that's. I mean, I'm hoping that we're going to see some of that, where it's just like try to contain Denard, and then there's this guy going straight upfield at you with these tree legs. And that's where I think he can be effective. It's really hard to see him doing much against Alabama, though. I mean, they do have a new defense, so maybe they'll be out of sync and out of place. But I think losing Fitz for that game is basically a death knell. Like, he's a guy who could make yards against busted plays and guys showing up at the wrong spot. And Rawls, we'll see. I mean, Fred Jackson thinks so, but I'm not so sure.
He definitely fits better when he has more of a physical advantage against the guys he's going up against. And against Alabama, that is certainly not the case.
I wonder if we'll see any Justice Hayes, because
he's been getting some hype, that's for sure.
He got some reps during the open practice and looked okay. I mean, he didn't do anything amazing. There were not that many opportunities to do anything amazing. So, but you know, he might bring that sort of Fitz Toussaint, I can beat you in space thing that. And that might be something that Michigan goes to if they're not finding a lot of successful roles.
Yeah, they might just have to find a different... you know, Fitz can find himself getting in space just by handing the ball off to him. Hayes, it might be more of a swing it out to him on a throw and see what he can do on the outside, but we'll see.
So, Dennis Norfleet, huh?
I know you love Dennis Norfleet.
I love Dennis Norfleet.
I'm a fan of the Mighty Mites, too, but we'll see. Fred Jackson did have a great line about him at Media Day where he pointed to the table next to us, which is about 3 or 4 feet off the ground, and said he can run right underneath that without ducking.
I looked for him at the practice, and he's not tall.
No, he is not.
I noticed that. He's but you know,
we can confirm Dennis Norfleet not tall.
So he didn't do anything. I was disappointed. I wanted to see him on the field, but we'll see. He's supposed to be kickoff returns and whatnot. He's probably more of a next year kind of guy.
I would think so. Although kickoff returns could get interesting with him. There are no kickoff returns. Maybe punt returns. Maybe we'll see him back there.
No, because Gallon's going to keep doing that. All right. So once we get Fitz back, we like running back. Wide receiver and tight end is. I don't believe in Roy Roundtree as an outside wide receiver.
Neither do I, and I hate to say it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I
mean, he's still willow thin, and he's going to get jammed, and he doesn't have the athleticism to really put it on cornerbacks. And, like, sometimes he'll be able to do it against, like, a Northwestern or anything, but one of the things that struck me when I went and I looked at the Sugar Bowl, and I did a passing chart for Denard for the season preview, is that there were, I think, two passes where Denard had good passes that went right to the receiver, but it was Roundtree, and he had a guy draped all over him. So separation is always going to be an issue, and I just don't see him being a high percentage downfield threat, especially if Gardner is going to move out there. So I'm sure he'll have better production than last year, but I'm not expecting much.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at looking at the Football Study Hall putting together the Michigan stat profile, and Roundtree's catch rate when he was targeted was way, way below even what Gallon was putting up. Gallon actually had a very impressive catch rate last year.
Well, those are a lot of screens.
There are a lot of screens in there.
I just looked at my UFR charts for this, and it's not all his fault. So I think only 30% of his targets were routine catches compared to 70% for Gallon.
Yeah.
So his hands, I don't know, are the problem. I think it's just the fact that he's not a guy who gets you those routine catches, or he's not a guy who can turn those ones into twos like Hemingway does.
Yeah, I don't even think the catch rate is as much talking about his hands as the fact that Roundtree's not a guy you're going to use in the screen. And, he's not that dynamic of an athlete where you just throw it to him on the edge and let him go.
He's a slot. I mean, the thing about
he's not going to get that much separation down the field. No. So it's tough to figure out how he's going to be very productive. People look at what he did 2 years ago and
slot.
Say he could, but he was a completely different position and a completely different offense, and that it's almost not relevant.
And he was good. I mean, if you go and you look back at those videos and you look at the bubble screens he ran, he was good at that. Mm-hmm. Like, he made big plays out of nothing there, and you don't expect him to do that because he's kind of a bigger, lankier guy, but he was slippery in small spaces, and then if you run him right down the seam when Denard's, doing the fake run thing and the safety freaks out, he's a good target because he's 6'1 instead of 5'9, and he's a good guy to throw at those worst Waldo plays.
Yes.
So I think that was the apotheosis. That was his apex right there.
And
he's just never going to get back there for Borges.
No, unless we see the bubble screen come back and Al Borges wants his receivers to block,
but,
all right?
But even if we do see the bubble screen come back, he's not going to be the guy catching.
It'll be Gallon, probably.
It'll be Gallon. But so that's we're negative Nancy's about that.
Yes, we are.
Well, let's be positive. Devin Gardner. So he did not take a single snap at quarterback during the open practice. There was maybe one that when everybody else was stretching and the quarterbacks were taking snaps. But when the offense was out there, he was on the first team in the junior Hemingway role, basically, where sometimes he was on the outside, sometimes he was in the slot, but he was the guy who was testing everybody deep. And he dropped a ball, and he couldn't bring in a high, hard one from Denard. It just went over his hand, so he taco-pants that one, even though Gardner is pretty hard to do that on. But so we didn't see what everybody has been talking about, but the drumbeat from spring when he was just moonlighting, and then in fall, it's just like he keeps doing crazy things in practice. We have to put him out there. We have no choice.
Not a lot of options out there.
So
unless you're looking at freshmen or guys who are effective.
Gerald Robinson, right.
I'm not buying into Gerald Robinson considering he's got hype. And
I know. Well, so the Rothstein thing makes me think that he took a survey of the outgoing seniors, and Robinson won the breakout player thing there. And it's an anonymous survey. You could pick one of your other teammates. You know, it just seems like that is a real.
That is strange.
Data point.
It seems like the main data point going in his favor, but he keeps getting this buzz, and then you go and look at the spring game or practice, and he's invisible.
Yeah, that was. Basically, there's my Gerald Robinson preview. This happened, but then he was invisible. And I agree with you. And I think moving to Devin is something that they wouldn't have had to do if they were really had confidence in Robinson.
Yeah.
So it's really put up or shut up for him now, because if he gets passed by Chesson and Darbo, it's over.
Yeah, he's not seeing the field.
And then you got Jeremy Jackson, who's, basically a small tight end.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, Jackson may not be more talented than Gerald Robinson, but he's got a very set role. He's got a skill set that he specifically brings, and that's being kind of a, almost a tight end.
Yeah,
wide receiver.
I think.
And he's got great hands.
Well, he had a pretty horrible drop at the open practice. We don't really know about his hands. But
he was great in high school. He caught everything in high school.
I think he might lose his job to Devin Funchess in that department, because this is what everybody who went to the practice was like. They were like, Gardner first, and then the second thing was like, man, this Funchess kid. Because, you saw him in high school, right?
Yeah, no, he looked great last year when Harrison mostly split him out into the slot instead of playing him down the line, which I imagine is how Michigan would use him for the most part. And he's every bit of 6'3 or 6'4.
He looks taller than that.
He's a tall kid. He's 6'4 at the very least.
His arms are huge, enormous.
Which he must have spent significant amount of time in the weight room.
I just mean they're long.
Oh, okay. I was like, if he's all jacked, what he looked like last year.
He's a pretty skinny dude for a tight end, but his arms are incredibly long. And the thing is, I think they see that he has the athleticism to beat people deep, because they went to him on a corner route that he caught for a touchdown. They went to him on this was just a skeleton drill, but they had a couple of wide receivers to one side, clearly running routes designed to take safeties deep, and then they leaked him out on a delayed wheel, and that was just...
That's exciting. I can see that working.
I can see that working really well. And I think everybody is pretty hyped up about this guy, and he might not be able to block yet, but...
Probably not, considering he wasn't even asked to do it much in high school.
No, but they need that underneath huge target. I mean, if Denard's going to be inaccurate... which he is going to be inaccurate, you might as well throw it at the guy with the huge catching radius.
And yes.
That's Devin Funchess. So that's a breakout player prediction, I think, for here. And then you've got Williams and Moore, and those guys will be blockers, I think. And we might see some of them get a catch here and there, but I'm not expecting huge things statistically out of any of them. But
no, Moore's done nothing, and Williams was an offensive tackle last year.
I mean, they'll use Williams.
Yeah,
we're going to see a lot of him.
We'll see him. He'll be on the line, I'm sure.
I mean, they're going to use him as an extra tackle, and then he'll probably catch a touchdown.
Yeah.
Where they roll it out, and he falls down or something, and then he leaks out to the other side, that classic play. So some hope here, are we talking, or it doesn't look good?
The hope hinges on the one guy we haven't gone into detail about is Jeremy Gallon. I think I'm more hype on Jeremy Gallon than most.
What can Gallon do this year that he didn't do last year? I mean, he's just kind of that guy.
Well,
right?
He's going to get targeted more, and I think that's where we'll see his production go up, is simply by them throwing at him more. But he, He wasn't bad going downfield last year.
I don't remember them throwing the ball to him downfield.
It was mostly Notre Dame, but you know, I'll base it off Gary Gray was absolutely terrible catching it going for it. No, the one where he went up over Gary Gray.
Yeah, but come on.
I mean, yes, Gary Gray was terrible, but I do, first of all, looking at him coming out of high school, yes, he wasn't a receiver, but he was that kind of an athlete where everybody looked at him and got very, very excited about his potential.
Yeah.
And I think his level of athleticism, even if he's not the biggest guy, he's not going to be going downfield and going up over people. Us targeting him more, getting him the ball more, I think he's going to do some interesting things this year.
Borges did say he had the best camp of any of the receivers. So there's that point in your favor. I don't know. I just think that the combination of a guy like Denard and Gallen is tough if that guy is not being a slot in a Rodriguez-type offense where he just gets the ball and he's a constraint, and he gets a lot of opportunities in space that are very easy to complete.
Yeah.
Like Rodriguez, I mean, not Rodriguez, Denard to Gallen downfield is asking an inaccurate guy to hit a small guy, and it's just a bad combination to me. So that's why I think Funchess is going to be such a good option, and I think Jeremy Jackson will produce, and I think Gardner will produce, because, you know, it just makes more sense to
throw it up to the 6'4 guys.
You don't have Drew Brees back there, so I don't know. I'm a little skeptical about big-time Gallen production, but we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
We'll see. Offensive line.
Ew.
Well, I'm very happy with the starters.
The starting is great. It's what we got behind them.
Taylor Lewin is like a top 10 NFL draft pick, according to a lot of different observers at this point. I'm very high on Schofield. Omama, you know, he struggled early last year, but if you look at the UFR charts, he got a lot better in the last three games. I finally learned how to pull. So I think that'll be a big thing, is being able to pull Omama around allows you to use Taylor Lewin as the donkey-crushing lead blocker he was born to be,
yes,
which we didn't get to do a lot last year. So I think that'll help out the run game. I think Barnum is, I mean, he's not going to be Molk, but I think he's still going to be a good player, like a B-plus player. And, you know, you need hype to be on those all-Big Ten teams because nobody really knows anything about offensive linemen. But I think that if he had started for a couple of years already, he'd be in that conversation. Mm-hmm. Like, he'd be behind Wisconsin's guy, but
he had a lot of hype coming in out of high school too.
And when it, like, you go back years and you get the kind of like hype about this guy from coaches and teammates that, you know, there's like hype that you think is meh, just people talking. And then there's hype that seems real, and his seems real.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I know that the spring highlight films are not the most indicative things in the history of the world, but he looked good on those. He was very mobile. They pulled him. So I think that's a great ability to have in your center, especially when you want to get outside, is just to be able to pull him and have that second lead blocker on that. So I think he'll be good. And then left guard is, like, if you've got a question mark at left guard and the rest of your line is set, everybody has question marks on their offensive line. So I think it'll be fine. And, you know, if Mueller doesn't work out, Kalis will be fine.
Yeah, he's the most college-ready lineman people have said in a long time. So.
Like, the downside there is not great. Like, that spot will be...
The worst comes to worst, you're plugging in a five-star.
Right. Yeah, the five-star guy who people say is Jake Long as a guard and whatnot.
Yes.
It's really hard for me to figure out which of my, like, bulleted hype lists was my favorite, Kalis or Norfleet. I think Norfleet, but that's just...
But you just love Dennis Norfleet.
I do. I love Dennis Norfleet. So, the offensive line is great until anyone gets a hangnail, and then it's just death.
And then it is complete death. Because I don't care what people say about his size and how big he is and how he looks like he's ready to play. Ben Braden is not ready to step in at tackle.
Really?
He's just, I mean,
he's needs
at Rockford, Rockford ran the ball all the time.
Yeah.
They didn't pass. And when he was going into pass coverage, they were playing against Zealand West, not exactly a powerhouse.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how he didn't give up a sack in high school, because he got absolutely torched around the edge a couple times, and their quarterback just happened to get it off before he got hit. But Braden did not look like he really knew how to pass block that well. And if you're putting him in a tackle, that's not going to go well.
I think Kalis will be the first guy off the bench no matter what.
I would expect that, but if if a tackle gets hurt, they're going to have to put Brzezinski in or something, a guard or Meal. And, you know, they're going to have to kick Kalis out. But then you've got a true freshman. And even though I think Kalis is very good, he's not the tallest guy in the world.
You know,
and that tackle, it's a little scary.
It is scary. And I'm not doubting that at all. But I think, so you've got the starting five, all upperclassmen. And then I think the first guy off the bench, no matter what happens, is Kalis.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Barnum goes down, in that case, you pretty much have to put Miller in.
Yeah.
But any of the other four spots, Kalis comes in first, and then if you have to go deeper than that, Yeah.
Like Joey Brzezinski?
You might be able to survive with Brzezinski if you get an interior line.
Yeah.
But if two tackles go down, it's
that season's over.
Yeah, it's done.
Yeah.
Unless Magnussen can hack it at right tackle.
Yeah, although he didn't look... He's got the frame to be big, but he doesn't look like he is...
He's light now, yeah. But he's more advanced technically than Braden.
He's certainly probably the second most talented offensive lineman in that class.
Yeah, well... It depends. I mean, Braden has a bigger upside just because he's bigger.
Yeah.
But Magnussen is...
In terms of current ability. Yeah,
current ability, I think Magnussen is probably the best. And they wouldn't put him on the interior at all, but I think they would slide him out. So I think they can survive one injury, which they did last year. But let's cross our fingers.
Yeah, please, no two. That would be frightening.
So overall, what are you feeling? They were something like 42nd in yards last year. They were pretty good in the advanced stats. I think they were 9th in FEI. They backslid a little bit from last year. The interceptions had a lot to do with it. What are you thinking numerically in terms of...
You know, as long as everybody stays healthy, I think they're as good as last year, if not probably a little bit better.
I mean, if everybody stays healthy, they should be better.
Yeah.
I mean, just because you expect Denar to improve a considerable amount.
Yeah.
They have a feature back from day one now. Well, day two.
Yeah.
And the only really painful loss, I think, is Hemingway, and maybe Gardner can be Hemingway, if not better. So...
Yeah.
I think
we're going all in on the Gardner hype, I think.
Yeah. I mean,
but I just watched that camp video from high school and I get a little excited.
I've watched that tough. Like 4 or 5 times this summer. It's
I sent that to Gerd from the Ozone yesterday. He was talking smack about moving Devin Gardner out there. I was just like, watch this, please. Give me your thoughts.
Talking to that guy is not.
As long as you know not to take him seriously, then it's okay.
That's true. So, but the drop off here is severe. Like Denar gets hurt, you know, the wrong offensive lineman gets hurt.
Yeah,
Gardner doesn't do well. Like I think we're pretty solid at running back.
Running back, they should find somebody be able to produce,
and then you know they'll find some decent guys at wide receiver. But it's really hard. I mean, it's a real wide span of things that can happen this year.
Yeah, Denard gets hurt or a couple tackles go down and it could just be a complete tire fire.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I think they'll be quite good.
So we're very wishy-washy about the offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's all contingent on injuries. All right. Really.
So we'll put in some music here and then we'll come back and talk about the defense. You left ass up to a ball of power, thoughts at 1,000 miles per hour. Hello, ghetto, let your brain free. Believe there's always more. So, on defense, it all starts with the line. And that's something that, you know, any newspaper writer could have said, and I feel a vague sense of shame that that's what I started off by saying. But it's true, because they lose 3 starters. They have nobody. They moved their weak side defensive ends to strong side defensive end and 3 tech. And
now that might not even be happening.
I don't even know, man.
this is the clear weak point of the team, and... The key to the whole season.
Yeah, and I want to throw this out there. I want to throw out the Heininger exception. Because that kid got his ass kicked against Eastern Michigan earlier in the year and kept getting a little bit better. And by the end of the year, when he was out for the Sugar Bowl, it was like, damn, we really need Will Heininger.
Yeah, Will Heininger is the number one reason I have a massive amount of faith in this coaching staff.
JT Flick. He's number 2.
Okay. Heininger stands up to me. I have my Will Heininger story from high school because he went to Pioneer.
Yeah.
And my good friend in high school played running back for our crosstown rival Huron. And my friend's senior year, he played running back. Heininger was playing on the defensive line for Pioneer. He never really stood out that much for us. And Pioneer's not that great of a football program. And at some point, my buddy got into space against Heininger, and Heininger tackled him. And Huron's head coach pulled my friend out of the game and told him to sit on the bench because he just got tackled by that kid. And that was apparently completely not okay. And Heininger went from that and weighing probably in the neighborhood of 200 to 210 pounds to being a 290-pound starting defensive tackle for Michigan, who was actually not bad.
Yeah.
And I would never have guessed that would happen in a million years.
No. And, you know, he he is the narrative of, we can do this. Like, this is a $6 million defensive tackle. Now we can rebuild it. We can make it better. It's still a hell of a project.
It's still, Quentin Washington might be the starting three tech, and that's.
I think he'd be the starting
nose tackle, and then Campbell at three tech. And that is.
I don't know if that's more or less frightening.
I think Campbell fits in better at the three tech, I think, in terms of the way he plays. But,
yeah.
But then, having Quentin Washington as the anchor of your defense,
who's never really played, moved from offensive line, and didn't get any spring buzz, didn't really do anything in the spring. Like, Richard Ash did more stuff in the spring game than he did.
So that was a surprise. And yeah. I mean, I don't. We'll see Andre Pipkins this year. I think almost certainly. I think he's too talented to not see the field.
Yeah, we'll see him, but still, like.
But throwing in a freshman at nose tackle is also frightening.
I do think
even one that
Ash might be able to give us some snaps. Like, I watched him in the spring game, and then at this open practice, I looked at him, and he is, the transformation in his body is equivalent to what Will Campbell has done.
There are no longer smaller players orbiting Richard Ash.
No, there are not. They are gravitationally attracted to him, but they don't actually fall into orbit. So he looks like he can maybe move around a little bit now. Yeah, he's the kind of guy who had the frame where he briefly had USC and Florida offers before his conditioning basically
fell off a cliff,
and those offers went away. So I think, you know, you can get some snaps from him. I think you're hoping maybe Heitzman can give you something as a strong side defensive end along with Brink. And
between those two guys, they should have one who can be
one
a viable
guy
backup
who can give you some snaps. I just don't see where the pass rush is coming from. Especially if they go with this Washington thing with Black at the weak side defensive end, because Black bulked up, right?
Yeah.
Black was supposed to be a tackle, so he might be able to get some pass rush against guards, but if you want him to be the most dynamic defensive player on your roster, which is what the weak side end has to do, you just spent an offseason making him anything but that.
I could certainly foresee a scenario in which Black falls out of the starting lineup entirely, and they put Beyer in there, or Frank Clark if he comes back from his legal issues.
Yeah.
Because they're going to need somebody to come off that edge, and if Black is way bigger, and
there's like two modes to the defense though that are very, very different. So when they went to the nickel, which it was a lot like last year, but they had Black and Rowe as the defensive tackles, with strong side linebacker DuJour and Beyer as the defensive end. So that is an aggressive pass rushing defense that can stunt around and will get crushed if it's not in on a passing
if
down.
If anybody hands the ball off against them, it's frightening.
When they can put that nickel out there effectively, then I can see them getting a pass rush in situations where they've put someone behind the chains. It's just like, you know, what happens if somebody just drops back on 1st and 10? They sit there for a long time surveying the field, and I think the secondary is good, but that's always going to be a problem.
Yeah. Madison's going to have to go mad scientist with the blitzes a little bit this year, I think, which he's shown that he can do.
He's good at doing. Yeah. I mean, last year, the shocking thing to me is when Seth put together a chart of, like, I count rushers now in UFR. He put it together a chart of how much Madison rushed. It was 4 almost all the time. And
it's just, you never know where those 4 are coming
exactly
from.
You know, that's what people talk about being a big advantage of the 3-4 is you never know what the 4 or the 3-3-5. And Madison's doing that out of a 4-3 package. And, you know, he uses the Oki and stuff, but he was really good at getting those unblocked guys in. And the cost was some of those weird zones that we saw, but.
Or like the Notre Dame go ahead touchdown in the last minute.
That was just like, he thought he had Ed Reed, and he's like, oh, wait, no.
Turns out Marvin Robinson is
not
Ed Reed.
So I, you know, he learned from that. And that's all I wanted to see in the first year is just like, oh, right. And then.
This is college football.
Right. And then they go from there. So. I don't know, man.
The defensive line, trying to figure that out right now. We don't even know who's going to start.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, everybody hypes up Clark, but Clark didn't do anything last year except that interception, which was a great play, but it's also you were unblocked and you caught a ball that was thrown at your head.
It's a play purely based off of his athleticism.
And like, when... You remember when Shielhaus was ripping off those huge runs in the second half of the Illinois game?
Frank Clark was not holding
all
the
Frank
edge.
Clark.
Yeah.
And we've got hope there, I guess, but like, there's nothing that he did on the field that should give you that hope.
But Beyer at least saw the field last year. So
Beyer did see the field. He's
more, I would say.
He actually started in the Western game. Yeah. He did poorly, but as a true freshman coming out of high school,
who is not very big either,
and learning a new position, I mean, that's fine. And when they went to their heavy package, they put him in the game instead of Cam Gordon. So I think that says something positive about him. And I'm encouraged that I think that he'll be good this year at like 250, and then we might see him actually get pass rushing snaps.
Yeah.
In the base defense, depends on how this Black Washington thing works out, but I think against teams that aren't Alabama, he'll be a starting weak side defensive end, and I think he'll do pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, so we're terrified there. The nice thing is that the back seven returns essentially intact. The only person who left was Troy Wolfolk, who couldn't really find a position, got benched in the Ohio State game. I mean, great kid, I had a dog, but just star-crossed for his entire career. Losing him is not going to be much of a blow.
No.
But let's talk linebackers first. Obviously, Jake Ryan's back, Demons is back, Morgan's back. Two of those guys are freshmen going to sophomore years. Demons probably topped out at this point, but could always learn more about the defense, get his zone drops better, know where he's supposed to be going. I mean, linebacker hesitancy was a big problem last year. And moving from year one to year two in the same system for the first time since 2007 will help these guys. And I think we can expect them to pick up their play. I just don't know if we're going to see it because they don't have Mike Martin in front of them. And it's going to be a much tougher go for them.
Certainly. I think Morgan probably of all the guys, well, I take it back. Ryan certainly has room to grow and has the sky high potential there. But Morgan, we might see the biggest leap in terms of where he was playing at last year, where him in pass coverage was a little frightening. I mean, he was good in run support. Coverage was not so great.
He was erratic in run support. He got better towards the end of the year. I mean, he had 10 tackles in the last two games of the season. But
yeah.
There's a lot of like minus twos for him in UFR where he's just doing the exact wrong thing.
But you saw the flashes of him where you could see him coming up and being a very solid guy coming off that weak side.
I mean, whenever I talk about Morgan, I go back to being at the Glazier Clinic, which was great. And Madison is showing you film of the Virginia Tech game, and he singles out Morgan. It's like, you think that little freshman will hit you? And he just always says little freshman, and I'm like, that is a very large man, yes. Madison. But he loved the kid.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think he's ideally more of a middle linebacker in this scheme, but we won't be able to see him there because Demons is the incumbent there and deserves to start. We might see him move next year. I wouldn't be surprised.
Although Joe Bolden's going to put up quite a fight. All right.
Bolden
might be seeing the field a lot this year.
That's true. I don't think it's out of the question that Bolden is the guy who actually ends up being a Sam linebacker because they need someone there. Jenkins Stone comes in very light. Bolden is, 6'3", 230?
Like, yeah, right in that range already.
If you're looking at somebody who's got the right body type to be that Jake Ryan type, it's Bolden. So I wouldn't be surprised if Morgan actually ends up, but this is not even about this year.
Yeah,
no. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
Straying off topic.
Anyway, and then another guy to watch out for, I think, is James Ross.
Who was one of my favorite guys that I watched all last year.
So he has a reputation of just being a guy who knows where he's supposed to be all the time.
He's just always, at the end of the play, when the football's there, if you look for the football, you'll find James Ross.
Right.
That's how he plays. And something about his stance and how stocky he was last year made me think he was shorter and a little bit smaller than he actually was. But he's actually got, I mean, he's about 6 feet, and I think he's up around 220 now, which is enough to see the field. And his instincts at linebacker are really impressive. He's a guy who, even if he hasn't entirely picked up on the defense, might be able to just get by on knowing just how to play football. He's really good in that regard. And, you know, every time I saw him last year, he was racking up double-digit tackles easily.
Well, sometimes there's just guys who just know what they're doing out there, like David Harris. And there was a little ESPN video about Alabama's linebackers that was really interesting, where he's talking about, I'm looking to see if the guard's heavy on his hands, which means run, or if he's light on his hands, or he means pass, if he's leaning one way or the other. Like, and there's some guys who just have that sort of innate, I can process this information in front of me very quickly and go make a decision. And it sounds like James Ross might be one of those guys. So I expect him on the field, especially with the injury problems with Ringer and Antonio Poole. Bolden, too. And next year, they'll actually have fantastic depth, which is an amazing
linebacker thing. Position is looking pretty strong moving forward.
All right, the secondary. Man, can you believe it was like a year ago that Never Forget was like the touch? It was the thing. Like, so part like the season like preview story is all about how the Rodriguez era seems 100 years ago, and that was never brought home more forcefully than when I'm looking at the secondary preview from last year. And it has that J.T. Floyd still against Penn State.
He's running in the complete wrong direction.
And I was just like, wow, like that seems like that happened in 1870, you know? And Mallory versus Gibson is a one round knockout. It's like Mike Tyson.
Yeah, it's
that
an
one
early
guy.
Tyson fight. Yeah. Which one guy? So many of those one guys.
The one guy I saw on ESPN Classic that one time. So that'll clear it up for everybody. So I have a lot of faith that Floyd will continue to get better. I don't think he's ever going to be elite just because he lacks the athleticism. But I thought he was a pretty good Big Ten corner. I thought he was a B, maybe even a B plus last year.
Yeah, that performance against AJ Jenkins last year.
Yeah, I mean, that was a game sealer right there, that interception. And he had baited that guy the whole game. And when I do the UFRs, I was trying to figure out how good Countess actually was. So one of the opportunities to do that is when teams run mirrored routes on the outside. So if they're all running slants or they're all running goes, I would watch to see how he was doing versus how Countess was doing. And invariably, his coverage was better. Like he was closer. He was better. He was more in position to make a play on the ball. So I think Countess has more upside right now. Floyd was better last year, but maybe he won't be better this year because Countess will develop, of course. And, you know, you've still got Avery in there. And unfortunately, you lose Talbot, who had some promise in the spring. You lose Tamani Carter, who nobody had really talked about. And you've got maybe a little bit of a depth question because you've got Raymond Taylor and then Delonte Hollowell. And Hollowell's very small.
He's tiny.
And he's like nickelback only. And then Raymond Taylor can probably play on the outside, but, you know, we haven't really seen him. So you could get an injury or two there, and you're looking – depth is not quite as good as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, Hollowell showed some flashes on special teams last year, but that's not really what you want to base your assessment of his nickel ability
on. Yeah, but I mean, he's not a guy you can put on the outside.
On the outside, certainly not.
I mean, that's like Sissoko versus Floyd, not JT, the other Floyd, Michael. So I think this is not quite as bad as the offensive line in terms of depth, but you know, you got three solid guys, and that should be enough. The cornerbacks don't get hurt quite as much as other guys. Is that just, I just pulled that out of my butt.
The never forget thing is still too fresh in my mind to be able to go there.
I can't believe I said that.
you are just inviting the wrath of the angry, blank-headed gods.
All right. I take that back so hard. Oh my. Oh, crap.
All right. We know who to blame.
Yeah. Safety. Safety,
like we're confident.
Yes. Has this ever happened? Do you remember, this is also like, wasn't this 100 years ago? Do you remember that one of the big running like things everybody talked about this last offseason was, is Jordan Kovacs any good? Do you remember that?
I do.
And like nobody really
knew. And I will admit before last season, pretty skeptical about his ability and coverage.
I was mad at myself. I went back and I looked at the preview for the secondary last year and I didn't say, shut up, Jordan Kovacs is awesome. And I'm like, oh man, I'm a jerk. But he is awesome.
He is.
He's not, you know, he's never going to be Ed Reed again, but how many long touchdowns did Michigan give up last year before the Ohio State game when they screwed up their scheme?
Notre Dame was the only one that comes to mind.
That one wasn't really on safety.
Yeah, and that wasn't at all.
Long one for Purdue. They had a tunnel screen that went like 48. But that
was coming underneath too. You know, that wasn't beating still, over the top. It was still a long touchdown, but it wasn't beating over the top.
And then in Nebraska, Thomas Gordon. No, it wasn't Gordon. It was actually Wolfolk got burned on a play action thing. So two. And then they changed their scheme in the Ohio State game. So the corners actually had the deep coverage, and that didn't work out well.
Yeah, Kovacs mentioned at Media Day that whatever they were trying, Ohio State had the perfect counter for it, and they weren't adjusting well.
Yeah, so that's not really on the safety. That's more of a game strategy thing. So I've got two for a whole year.
That was a bit of a change.
I know. This is the only time where I feel like broadcasting a radio show would be productive, because you just look on my face after I said two. Anyway, and then Thomas Gordon, you know, he had that highlight reel interception against Eastern Michigan. Yeah. He was solid the rest of the year. I really didn't get why they were screwing around with Wolfolk at safety, because I thought he was really good. He enters his second season as a full-time starter. You know, he's probably not NFL sized yet, but
he's got the NFL abs though.
Yes, does. I think that he's probably going to be pretty damn good.
Yeah. And at the very least, he'll be solid and you don't have to worry about him getting beat over the top very much.
And people are talking about Jared Wilson and Marvin Robinson in a very positive light as well. So, I mean, Wilson came in for the spring, looked pretty good. I mean, still look kind of slow on some things, but that'll happen. And then Robinson, you know, he's been waiting, biding his time. And I think that we might actually start seeing him on the field this year. He loves Mallory. He's really working on all the stuff he needs to. I think they have depth there, and they've got quality starters. And I just thank you, Iowa running backs, for taking these bullets for us. Yes. I just what happens when they run out of? I mean,
because they're on their way.
Yeah, like
because they're on their way.
Yeah, like three more running backs to go, and then where? I just hope Michigan State quarterbacks. Let's go with that. Can we get an angry Michigan State quarterback?
Or an angry Michigan State like linebacker one?
No,
because DT or something would be nice.
No, quarterback because they've only got one.
That's true.
So. Once Maxwell's out of the picture, not that we're wishing injury on it, we are.
I'm going to slowly back out of this conversation.
Let's conversation.
It's a dark turn.
Yeah. Wow. Detroit. Brief mention of special teams. It'll be okay. I mean, Brendan Gims, he was like 5 or 6 at the open practice. He'll be okay. He'll look totally.
And
like
we don't attempt long kicks anyway, so.
Yeah, which is great.
Awesome.
And the kickoffs won't matter anymore. Punt game, Gallon will be solid. Punting, that's kind of the biggest wild card there.
But I think between Weil and Hager up, one of those two will be good enough where it's not a problem area.
I mean, what Weil is going to do is he's always going to punt at 42 yards or 40 yards. And what Hager up could do is he could punt at 14 or he could punt at 72. And you want Hager up to get it together because like his freshman year was the second best in the history of Michigan football. And that came after he had these freshman jitters in the first two games where he was just averaging like 20 yards a kick because I think he dropped one or something.
He shanked a couple too.
Yeah, and then he gets it like 4 games into his freshman year and just starts annihilating the ball. Like he had a 72-yard punt in the air against Purdue.
Which is ridiculous.
So that's pretty much the only question mark on special teams is whether Hagerup can get his head back together.
And there's a pretty solid safety net if that doesn't work out. But yeah, special teams should be fine.
I took a poll when I was in New York, and I just asked people like what they thought the season record would be after 12 games. I started at 7-5, and I went up all the way up to 12-0, and it was split between 8-4 and 9-3. So we are either a chagrined or very realistic fan base.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're still a little PTSD from the Rodriguez era.
And there were a few holdouts for 10-2, nobody for 11-1, and then that guy. 12-0. There was a that guy.
Always. Always.
So that seems a little, I don't know, the Alabama thing is really complicating that, but that seems slightly pessimistic to me.
Yeah, I would say I lean towards 9-3, but I think 10-2 is realistic. I mean, Michigan was one, you know, close pass interference call in an overtime away from only having one loss last year.
Yeah, but they were also
they also got remarkably fortunate in the mid. I know you can't. We're not allowed to do that. But you know, but still, you know, football's random. Michigan has a good enough team where if they get a couple, if they pull out a lucky game or so, that puts them all of a sudden in the national title picture. I'm not going to say Michigan could get lucky against Alabama and still get crushed, but in another game, if they have their poor game and still manage to come out with a victory, they might run the table in the Big Ten.
Well, now.
I know. All of a sudden, I just got on a runaway hype train.
Yeah, wow. You're all sunshine. All right.
They're still going to lose to Alabama.
They're still going to lose to Alabama. Let's talk to Jamie. All right. All right, we welcome in Jamie Mack, of course, from JustCoverBlog.com, our perpetual Big Ten expert. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing today?
Good. So I thought we'd talk about the Big Ten. Does that sound good?
That seems reasonable.
So I thought we would kick off by talking about Michigan's division, which the Nebraska Blog Corn Nation has dubbed the Where is Wisconsin division. Of course, Michigan is favored by the media to win this division. I'm not so sure. But let's go from the bottom. Minnesota was not the worst team in Big Ten history last year, but they weren't good. And
no, they gave it a run.
They did give it a run. I mean, they've got Marquise Gary back. They have Rashid Hagman, who's going to be awesome. And they return a lot of starters. They've got a second-year Jarek Hill. They should be better, more competitive.
It's hard not to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they ended the season pretty well, you know, pretty strong. You know, they won a couple games, which, you know, like you said, they gave that worst Big Ten team in history, they gave it a run until about late October. And then when they got that off their back, they actually played some pretty competent football. They beat Iowa again, they beat Illinois, and they almost upset Michigan State.
Yeah, man.
So if you use that as a, you know, as sort of like a momentum building thing, maybe they could do well. I think they got a good shot into a bowl game though, because their schedule is pretty easy.
So
they should win all four non-conference games, for example.
But this is not a team that's any threat to Michigan, really. I mean, they contain Gray and they just run with Denard and it's over, I assume. I mean, that's going to be like a 14-point spread or something.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Is this game out? It's not out.
I have not seen a spread for this game. No, not for this one.
I wouldn't think so.
No.
So Minnesota is a mildly annoying flea in the Big Ten this year. We can say that and we can progress.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've got some good players. I think they'll be better, but yeah, they're just not, you know, the Hageman kid at defensive tackle, you brought him up before. You know, he's a big key, but like, that's like the difference between them being, you know, 3-9 and actually making a bowl game at 6-6.
So Minnesota, not that interesting again.
No, not really.
All right.
Actually, less interesting because we don't get Gopher Quest this year.
That's true. So let's not talk about them since they're boring. All right, moving on to probably the second least threatening team in the league, the division, is Northwestern. They lose Dan Persa. They have Kane Coulter now, full-time quarterback. They don't really have a whole lot else on offense. I mean, if they needed Kane Coulter to run, throw, and catch the ball last year, and now he's just doing one of those things. So they lose pretty much their most potent skill player to
quarterback. And they lose Jeremy Ebert, too.
And they lose Ebert. I mean, they got a couple decent offensive linemen, but their defense is always terrible. Yeah. I don't think a single Northwestern defender went in our crazy fantasy draft. So
that's probably wise.
So Ibrahim Campbell.
Oh, right. But he's just a guy who gets overrated because he's like
making 4,000 tackles. I drafted him, so yeah.
So, about that.
Yes, statistically, Brian Peters had always racked up numbers back there at safety for Northwestern.
There's always someone on Northwestern with a ridiculous number of tackles. That's just the way it is.
Campbell did a little bit of that last year. He should be pretty productive this year from a statistics standpoint.
Yeah.
So.
But, I mean, this is going to be – I don't see them deviating from what they've been in the recent past, where they're around 500. They're competitive in a lot of games. They do something – oh, shit. You know what? We forgot about Kyle Prater.
Oh, that is right. They do have Kyle Prater.
So, I mean,
that's a former five-star.
That's a big X factor there.
It is. Yeah. It depends whether he lives up to the hype or whether he's the guy who couldn't find playing time.
He got a waiver.
Although it was at USC. So.
He got a waiver.
Yeah.
And he's behind, like, Robert Woods and stuff. So you can be behind Robert Woods
and
still be the best receiver in the Big Ten.
Yes.
So, yeah.
I actually think their offense is going to be fine, despite the change in quarterback and Coulter not being a receiving threat. The three-pronged threat anymore. You know, because I just think they're going to be fine. I love all their receivers. I think they've got some potential with guys like Christian Jones and Rashad Lawrence as well. And, you know, Prater has been opening up eyes throughout summer camp from what I've been reading. And I just like Coulter. You know, their two best moments last year were against BC and Nebraska, and he was quarterback for a lot of those, for all of the BC game, and he came in and played the second half of the Nebraska game at quarterback, if I believe. So, you know, I think they're going to be fine on offense. They're going to do what they always do. They're going to be able to move the ball down the field. They're going to be able to run a lot of plays when they get going. The big question is, can they, you know, maximize all their drives? They have been a failure in the red zone for a couple of years going now. And, you know, I think...
I mean, Prater might swing that as a guy who you can
exactly.
Just
that's exactly where I was going with that. You know, last year this team was 22nd in the country in red zone scoring attempts, but they were only 83rd in the country in red zone scoring percentage. you know, can Prater, you know, make a difference in that? And I think Coulter, though, might help a little bit.
He is more mobile than him.
Yeah, you know, Persa, you know, because of that Achilles, I never thought he got that running mojo back last year that he had in 2010 prior to the injury. And, you know, maybe, yeah, Coulter, more skillful at running the football, might help in that. But this has been a long-term problem for Fitzgerald and this offense. They've done really well, you know, between the 30s, but once they get to the scoring area, they can't convert into touchdowns. They're at 50% as far as kicking field goals at 40 yards or more the last 3 years. So they've got some, they leave
Sounds
a lot of points
good.
On the board. Yeah, they leave a lot of points on the field, and they do not have the defense to do that, you know.
So, but this, I mean, the Prater thing does change. Like, they're going to ruin somebody's season.
They always do, though.
I know, but it's...
But they will again. I mean, they will again.
Yeah, yeah.
And Coulter's a little underrated as a passer, too, I think.
I don't know.
He put up better numbers than Persa last year. He did. He had, like, almost a full yard more per attempt.
Really?
Yeah, I think he was at 8.8 or something, and Persa was down at 8.
Well, this is what you get when you have a fantasy draft
exactly.
of Big Ten players. You get very esoteric knowledge on all the players that you actually drafted. So, all right.
At wide receiver, for the record,
are we upgrading Northwestern to like a quasi threat here? I think we seem to think that they might pull off 8 this year, 8 wins.
I think that to me they can be anywhere between 6 and 8, which isn't a huge.
That's not a huge. Yeah,
but they've been to 4 bowl games in a row, which is a good thing. However, they also had a losing record last year when it was all said and done for the first time since Fitzgerald's first year. So. You know, I'm not really sure which direction it's going there. I think the defense is just really kind of sort of bad.
I mean,
you know, in a way, this is kind of, you know, like Rich Rodriguez, Michigan, Evanston right now. The offense isn't as electric. Maybe the defense isn't as historically bad, but it's still pretty bad. And it's just, it cost them, you know, they really fell apart, I thought, the last season and a half because of the defense. And we'll see if they get it back. They're in total transition as far as going from a team last year that was half their starters were fourth or fifth year seniors. This year, half their starters are going to be from the 2010 recruiting class or more recent.
Mm.
And a lot of that is on defense, you know.
Yeah,
so,
well, they are getting
we'll see if the new
a little
faces
bit better
improving.
Talent. Like, they have the Odunigbo kid from Ohio who is by some lights the best kid out there. And I mean, that might be an impact guy they can put at weak side defensive end and actually get some production out of there. But
yeah.
I don't know. So Northwestern, quasi-threat, 8 wins. We need to move on.
You got it.
All right. So Iowa is next on the list. Heiko actually had a post on them and predicted that they would go 6-6 this year, which seems kind of harsh. But they've got Vandenberg. They have a couple of receivers that should be decent. They have the Polish hat at tight end. They're replacing, I think, 4 starters on the offensive line. They all their guys are from Iowa and they have no playmakers on defense. Their defensive line looks bereft.
And their running backs are.
And they have no running back, and they got a pretty decent secondary, but they got questions at safety, and it just seems like kind of feels like the Ferentz era is entering one of those lulls. You know, they had those 3 years where they were 6-6, and now like it's hard to see them really tearing anybody else up. I don't think it'll be 6-6 just because they've got probably the best passing quarterback in the league, but I don't see a whole lot of upside either.
They're definitely in a lull. You know, their rivals are Iowa State, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. They don't own any rivalry trophies right now. So
they beat Northwestern last year, though. So
oh, that's right. I forgot about that rivalry. See, Iowa doesn't consider them a rival. That's one sided, isn't it?
The Northwestern keeps beating them, and Black Heart Gold Pants just keeps on with the just Northwestern thing. So I feel that is a real rival for Iowa.
You know, Iowa might have 6-6 talent. But I think they've got a better than 6-6 schedule, and I think that's going to keep them in contention, I think, all year, whether they deserve to be in contention or not. Their schedule starts out Northern Illinois, Iowa State, Northern Iowa, Central Michigan, Minnesota. They should be 5-0.
Well, they lost to Minnesota last year.
Well, that's true.
And they lost to Iowa State last year. Didn't they? Steel chance.
Blowing holes in all my theories here. Well, you know, but they're back at home. Both those games are back at
all right. Texas that's fair stadium. Enough.
And theoretically, that should, you know, that should help. They don't play in a true road venue until October 13th at Michigan State. So, I mean, I think they can. You know, I think 6-6 is a is on the low end of the prediction, just because I think they could get they should have five wins before September ends.
Could have a Rodriguez season.
I don't feel good about their roster at all. I mean, you know, their defense is starting, you know, more two-star recruits than three-star recruits, and you know, I know that at times Iowa has made some hay, you know, with some lower ranked players and whatnot. There's nobody in there aside from the cornerback position. There's nobody, you know, that fits that destructive Iowa defensive lineman or front seven sort of player that kind of sparked the 2008 and 2009 teams.
Well, and I mean, they're replacing both coordinators, so that's got to be a drag.
Oh. That's the first time. Those are the first coordinator changes in the Ferentz era, I believe, too.
There might have been one at offense coordinator early. I don't remember, but Parker's been there from the beginning. And they, you know, they replaced him with Greg Davis. Isn't that the equivalent of hiring Gerg? Isn't that a Gerg level hire?
Same school.
You know, Ken O'Keefe was never really a blog favorite of in Iowa circles. We might be seeing some pining for Ken O'Keefe by the time fall hits.
I mean, Texas fans were running that guy out of town on a rail. I read Barking Carnival and I read Burn Orange Nation, and both of those blogs just had the knives out for years for this guy. And I mean, yeah, okay, you did okay with Vince Young,
but anybody watched Texas's offense last year?
It's just I don't know, man. I'm skeptical of, like, that seems like a bad move.
Yeah, he was putting together that level of offense with 4 and 5 stars, and Iowa doesn't have those guys.
No. I mean, they make do. I mean, they managed to find wide receivers out of somewhere, and obviously Eric Campbell is doing work over there, but I don't know. I'm not seeing it with Iowa this year. I think that's, we still have a lot of ground to cover.
I just one last thing about Iowa. I would not be surprised if they have 8 wins going into the Michigan game, just because of their schedule.
All right. So there are 2 teams in the whatever it is division that seem like serious contenders for the throne, along with Michigan. They are Nebraska and Michigan State. We'll handle Michigan State last because I think they're the scariest. Nebraska, of course, got annihilated last year in Michigan Stadium. They did a lot of that to themselves, but they also just couldn't move the ball. I mean, Burkhead had, I think, 50 yards or something, and Martinez had the one pass, but they could not do anything. They, you know, they have walk-ons on the entirety of their interior line, but Nebraska's done that for years. Kenny Bell was a freshman who was pretty good last year, a wide receiver. He comes back for a sophomore year. They return, of course, the heart of their offense. They lose Levante David, which is a huge loss. That guy was the only thing standing between Denard Robinson and about 300 yards rushing in that game. And
I don't even think he was that good.
Levante David?
Well, I mean, I thought he was a little overrated, but I mean, I think the whole defense is overrated for Nebraska. So,
I cannot agree with you about Levante David. I just can't. That's just not happening.
Well, overrated doesn't mean bad, but you know.
I mean, they seem to have a solid defensive line, but there's no one who really scares you. Will Compton, solid, doesn't scare you. I mean,
not at all.
Steinkuhler and all those.
It's
a bunch of guys.
A bunch of guys, and they'll be decent to good, but you know, it's hard to see them really putting up a huge front. And then if what's his face? You know, the guy who throws like...
Taylor Martinez,
yes.
Magic.
If Team Magic is not better, and it's hard to see him ever be...
Not with that throwing motion.
I mean, yeah, it's like, imagine if Denard had that throwing motion. What would your reaction be when they're like, yeah, he's really grasping? You'd be like, you're a liar. So I think they're basically what they were last year. I mean, they'll be a little bit better on offense because of continuity, but I think who's their playmaker on defense?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, they've fallen pretty hard, I think, defensively, at least when you look at the numbers the last couple of years. You know, 2 years ago, they were giving up 10.4 points a game. Last year, they gave up 23.4. You know, they've fallen a touchdown each of the last 2 seasons as far as points per game. And even though I thought David was a little bit overrated, he was their best player by far, and now he's not there. You know, the D-line has some nice names coming back, but they sort of underachieved last year. And, you know, they don't even know who their 2 starting cornerbacks are going to be yet. And they're not selecting those from, you know, 4 or 5-star recruits. They're selecting those, you know, from, you know, that recruits that were 3 and 2 stars. So, I mean, I don't know if they have got they certainly don't have the vintage Nebraska defensive talent back there. And I just think that teams like Wisconsin and Ohio State and Michigan can kind of pound on them.
And then the offense seems like it is limited. You know, it can really run it up against lesser teams and teams that aren't prepared for it. But they found some brick walls last year. And, you know, they managed to completely annihilate Michigan State's offense. But their offense in that game was helped out a lot by field position. And they couldn't do anything against Michigan. You know, they lost to Northwestern, which is like the exact kind of defense that they should annihilate. But they just couldn't do it. And maybe that's just because Northwestern knows what is coming, because they run that kind of stuff all the time. So they're very well drilled on it. And then they just didn't have the playmakers. Like Burkhead, he's a tough guy and he gets a lot of carries. And, you know, he's like a good guy to have on your team. But
he's not a Heisman candidate.
No, he's not a Heisman candidate. He's so boring. Like, he doesn't.
He might be their best thrower. That's for sure. they run him into the ground. You know, they use him a lot. He had 284 carries last year.
Jeez.
You know, and he would have had, you know, probably would have had 300 if some certain games were more close. You know, and whatnot. They just don't feel comfortable with a lot of their skill position players right now in the Big Ten. I don't think, from what I've been reading. That's why they gave Burkhardt the ball so much. Throw a freshman out there, Amani Cross, running the football a little bit this year in hopes to kind of sprinkle in some diversity. But they just don't look like they've added anything. You know, we could look at certain teams, you know, even like Minnesota at the top of the conversation. We tossed out a defensive tackle that they added into the mix that, hey, he could, you know, he could help them win a couple more games. You know, Nebraska, I just don't see them. They almost look like the same sort of kind of 8-4 outfit that we saw last year. I just don't, you know, every time I feel that Michigan is going to go into Lincoln and really have a lot of trouble, I catch like even a quarter of that game last year, and they couldn't stop Michigan ever. Yeah, I mean, Toussaint had his best game against them last year.
Yeah, and that was with Levante David hacking Denard down as he broke into the open field. So
yeah, I mean, every time I get myself convinced that, Nebraska just underachieved, you know, the 6-7 seniors on defense are going to pull it together and they're going to get back to, you know, only allowing like 14-15 points a game, like a typical. I watch that. I catch a replay of that, or I catch a replay of the first three quarters of the Ohio State game where Braxton Miller just dominated him. And I haven't even seen any Wisconsin replays, but they got smoked in that game. You know, you just forget how outclassed they were in a lot of instances last year against the Big Ten.
All right, so we're pretty confident about Nebraska. Moving on to Michigan State. Now, I know they lost their entire passing offense.
Mm-hmm.
But they get DeAnthony Arnett from Tennessee, who had a very good freshman season there. You know, they managed to get Burbridge into school. They've got Bell back. And Andrew Maxwell is a redshirt junior who was a four-star recruit. He's, if you're replacing a quarterback, he's kind of the best guy to have waiting in the wings. They return everybody from their defense except Jarrell Worthy. And I think the guy who got overlooked in our fantasy draft was Anthony Rashad White, who I thought played very well against Michigan last year. Like, their other nose tackle spot is a problem because they're trying to put in a Pat Massey there. But those three linebackers, that secondary, you know, maybe Golston will figure it out finally. Rush, I mean, this is, I think, hands down the best defense in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any question there. And I think when you look at, if you put offensive units, defensive units, and even throw special team units in there, I think the Michigan State defense is the best unit in the whole conference. And they ought to be able to carry that, you know, throughout the year. I mean, I actually think they could lose to Michigan this year and still rebound and rally in November and win the division. Wouldn't surprise me at all.
What has happened, Jamie? What is going on?
What?
Never mind.
Well, I mean, they closed the year Nebraska, Northwestern, Minnesota. You know, I mean, they could run the table, and if Michigan runs into trouble in November, for example, you know, especially that game in Columbus, and
are we going to change our snap counts this year? You don't know. I just want someone to tell me they will.
I hope so.
Come on, man.
Please.
That was like the biggest transition cost, is that Rodriguez knew that had happened to him, and Borges did not know that had happened to him. And now he does, so maybe he'll fix it. That's the ticket.
Well, I like Michigan's chances finally against Michigan State. You know, I mean, I think this is the first time,
I don't know,
this losing streak began against them, where I think they're at least in position to win, and kind of the cards might be in their favor to a certain degree.
Yeah, I mean, the issue with Michigan State is how are they going to move the football? Because their running game was not particularly good that last year, even though they're bringing back most of their offensive line. You know,
Bell ran for like 5.2 yards. I mean, this is what I was looking up everybody's stats, and I was shocked. Baker couldn't do crap up against anybody except Michigan. But Bell, I mean, he tore people up. So, and that offensive line, you know, it wasn't good, but it was better than it should have been. So now they bring everybody back. They get Burkhart back, Burkland back. You know, it had a little bit of an injury issue with Treadwell, but that's kind of, you see them figuring that out. They have Deion Sims back, who's like 280 pounds at tight end.
But losing B.J. Cunningham and Keyshawn Martin, they need to figure out something because they were leaning so heavily on their passing game to be able to move the football last year.
I just think that that line, I mean, they are trying to think everybody, and they've got Chris McDonald and Fanoti, I think, played pretty well last year. So if you were really going to knock on them, it was going to be last year, and then this year they're all back and they're still in one piece, so... I don't know.
Yeah, I thought that offensive line last year was gonna cost them a lot more than it did.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I was really impressed by how they kind of patched that together throughout the year and worked with it. And I think some of it has to do with, you know, your quarterback's ability to get rid of the ball quickly, make decisions fast, and, you know, maybe that dynamic is altered a little bit, you know, with new skill position players and a new quarterback. So I'm not really sure that the offensive line is still. I mean, I'm not so sure the offensive line still isn't a weakness that could haunt them.
you can definitely write a story where Michigan State just can't move the ball this year, but it's equally plausible that they hardly miss a beat, that Maxwell steps in is pretty good, and Arnett is a go-to guy, and Sims is apparently supposed to be, you know, one of those hyped-up guys, and they still have a real pounder back there. So, you know, it's real hard to predict how their offense is going to be, but that defense is a constant. I would have put them above Michigan. I'm going to put them above Michigan in the blog bowl. Just they have fewer questions. And I know they have, like, big, huge questions. But, you know, Arkansas is a top 10 team this year, which is like,
yeah,
come on, John L. Smith, come on.
Well, I think that, I don't get too keyed up sometimes when the team returns all their wide receivers or a team doesn't return any of their wide receivers. You know, I mean, I think that that's not a bad spot to have question marks at. Especially when you're a team like Michigan State that should have the best defense in the country, or I'm sorry, in the conference rather. And like you said, they still have Bell that they can pound with. If Sims just lives up to half the hype that we're hearing out of East Lansing this summer, he's not going to be pretty fun come October 20th.
No, so
I'm sorry, the Michigan person in me is hoping that hype is a lot of summer mythology. But well, man, it seems like every time I read about Michigan State summer practices, he's doing something.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, you know, it'll take a couple of years for Brady Hoke's recruiting to really put Michigan in a position where they're just like, we don't care. Like, you have some guy. Oh, well. Like, this is still not a vintage Michigan team, and it won't be for another couple of years. And I think Michigan State is actually the favorite in the league. But let's move on.
What do you think their record's going to be going into the Michigan game? They got Boise State, Central Michigan, which is on the road.
Boise State lost, like, all
everything,
of their starters.
Everything.
Yeah.
So I expect them to beat them. I expect. I mean, you never know what's going to happen in a Michigan State Notre Dame game, but
yeah. Well, it's a night game in East Lansing.
Night game in East Lansing. Golson will be facing, I think, his first real defense because Michigan is coming afterwards. I mean, you want to put in a kind of shaky first-year starter against that defense at night in East Lansing. Mm-hmm. I think they beat Notre Dame. I mean,
then Eastern Michigan and then Ohio State at home again. They play Boise State, Notre Dame, and Ohio State all at home, all in September.
It's a slightly better home schedule than Michigan's. I'll just put that out there. Put it out there.
And then at IU and then Iowa back at home before Michigan. So, I mean,
they'll have one loss when they play Michigan.
Okay.
Why am I? I hate. We're done talking about Michigan State. Stupid Spartans.
I hope they have one loss. I mean, from a Michigan standpoint, I hope they have one loss because I think if Michigan does beat them.
I think six would be better.
That'll be two conference losses and maybe. Maybe they won't get. I guess I'm just worried that Michigan's gonna. My prediction on Michigan this year, I know I'm getting ahead of it, is that I just can't shake the fact they're gonna lose in Columbus, and that's gonna cost them the division. And it's probably gonna give Michigan State or Nebraska the.
Jamie, you're a jerk.
Division.
Let's talk about the other division. The Why is Wisconsin Hair Division? Indiana, your alma mater.
Yes.
Does it exist?
Cody Zeller is now 7 feet tall, from what I understand.
All right. Yeah, we're done talking about Indiana.
Some of the big news in the summer.
Penn State. We're done talking about Penn State.
Well, we are. We're done.
We're done. It's over.
That was it.
All right, so Purdue. Michigan plays Purdue. They beat the crap out of them this year. It's in West Lafayette this time around, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They have quarterbacks now that actually have ACLs. for now. Turbush is their starter. I don't know anything else about them except Kawan Short is pretty good. Their defense last year was awful. Their run defense was horrendous. It is the worst run defense I have ever seen an opponent have in UFR.
Which is pretty embarrassing when you have Kawan Short at nose tackle.
They were just on ice skates, and they were slow, and they were awful. So I don't, like, people are kind of talking about Purdue as maybe a quasi-sleeper. No. No.
Yeah, I don't really think so either, because they've got a good set of tackles, obviously Short and
Gaston.
Bruce Gaston, and I like their cornerbacks, but that's four guys. I mean, I'm not so sure the other seven are any better than what a team like Indiana puts on the field on defense, to be quite honest.
I don't think so.
I mean, a lot of times they play Kawan Short at defensive end sometimes because they're so undersized as a roster. So that doesn't seem like a great idea. You know, taking your killer defensive tackle, moving him outside just because you don't have any other size. So
yeah,
I think that's part of the problems. And on offense, right now they're kind of in the wrong conference. You know, they've got a lot of good perimeter guys, but they can't really hammer at you or pound at you. They don't have a really big or good offensive line. And I mean, I guess if their quarterback plays 12 games, that's considered a success at Purdue, regardless of what it's
plays six games, it's a success.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, if they just find some sort of anything to do on offense, they'll be better. But I can't see them being much of a threat to anybody who can run the ball in the league. All right, moving on. Illinois is actually kind of an interesting team.
I agree.
We ran through Illinois defenders early in that fantasy draft because they got Brown coming back. They have Buchanan.
Yeah.
They have Akeem Spence. They have Terry Hawthorne. They have Supo Sani, which I guess isn't that impressive. But they have a lot of talent on that defense, and it played very well last year. It's just that their offense was completely inept, which was not Nathan Chilhas's fault at all.
No.
But, I mean, Zucker's out, and they got Beckman, who ran a wide-open passing spread at Toledo, will probably do the same thing with Chilhas, and they have Darius Malines, and I don't think they have any offensive linemen at all except for Pochick, who's a 6'7 center, which is a really bizarre thing to be. And it seems like they're a year away on offense, but then that defensive talent's going to be gone. So it seems like, you know, they had an opportunity, but they zooked it.
Yeah, that's weird about Pochick. He's like their heaviest starter, I think.
He's like 335 pounds and 6'7", he's playing center. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by this team as well, and I know that we've been fooled by Illinois in the past on podcasts, but I throw that all at Zucker. I throw that all on his feet. You know, I'm not a huge Tim Beckman fan necessarily. I don't think he's that. You know, I guess I don't know where I sit, but watching him here at Toledo, he did put together some pretty good offenses. He had a defensive reputation actually when he arrived into town, but he didn't stop anybody in the 2 years he was here.
Well, wasn't he Ohio State's defensive coordinator or linebackers coach or co-DC or something?
I thought he had that position at Oklahoma State.
Yeah, okay.
So
he's got
some significant defensive talent though. You know?
He does.
And if he can kind of light a little bit better of an offensive fuse than what Zook and company did, you know, I think that, you know, this team started 6-0 last year before the offense just stalled out and couldn't cross the street anymore.
Yeah.
Stalling out its defense. So, I mean, this is a situation here where if this offense can just, you know, improve from like a D to a C+, I mean, that's the difference between Illinois being 6-6 and maybe 9-3 and being a threat in that division. We thought they were a threat in that division last year going into October.
We did.
Deep into October, we thought they were going to be a threat, and then it just sort of
flickered
out.
They're the only team that can possibly challenge Wisconsin in that division. So, I mean,
yeah.
I have a story from the Glazer Clinic about this, too. Their linebackers coach was there, and I went and I sat in the linebackers coach, and I was not impressed.
Oh, yeah?
He's the guy who was just yelling for 2 hours.
That's cool.
And just talking about loafs and stuff and, like, contrasting him with a Madison or a Funk or a Borges was just like, I don't necessarily think that you have a very advanced tactical understanding.
The wealth of tactical knowledge is not necessarily.
So we'll see if that actually has any bearing or if it's just I don't like that one guy who yelled.
Beckman, by the way, was cornerbacks coach for Ohio State for 2 years and then went to Oklahoma State.
Okay.
That's coordinator.
Wisconsin. We don't play Wisconsin, which I think we're all grateful for. They replace a lot
on their offense. Russell Wilson.
Wilson will be big. They lose Atun. They bring back Jared Aberderis, who is the leading receiver in the conference. Their offensive line, we drafted all of it, despite having like three new starters.
One of them is 6'8", 340 pounds, seems like that'll work out.
I'm high on this Bo Allen kid because I drafted him, but they seem to just crank it because they've got those linebackers. I think their secondary is in question, and those safeties don't seem that good. Their cornerbacks don't seem that good.
I don't think we drafted any of them.
No, we didn't. So obviously that means a great deal. But yeah. I think they're the clear favorite, not only in the division but in the conference. Danny O'Brien was pretty good at Maryland, and then Maryland imploded because of Randy Edsall, and then you put him on a functional offense where he can have all day. I think he's...
He's still getting pushed by their backup, I think is a little concerning.
No, they named in their starter like a couple weeks ago, so I don't think that's a situation in which somebody's getting pushed. So I think that might be a, please don't transfer backup quarterback kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I think they're not going to take much of a step back, if any.
Yeah, I don't really think so either. They've got three straight double-digit win seasons, and I think they're definitely in the weaker division of the two. They don't have at Oregon State might give them some trouble in the non-conference because it'll be interesting to see how they play, I guess, on the road. But yeah, they're gonna be there at the end.
So the only thing that gives me
a huge, I think it would kind of take a major event to see another team other than Wisconsin out of this division in the Big Ten title game. It really would.
So there is a major event that happened over the offseason, which was Paul Christ decimating their offensive staff. He goes.
Yes.
To Pitt, he takes basically their entire offensive coordinator, and they bring in Matt Canada from Northern Illinois, who I'm sure will be okay. But Christ really transformed that offense from a plotting Big Ten 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense to we put up 84 points on Indiana, sure, but 84 points. So
right. They
managed to have that crushing ground game, and then they had an extremely effective passing game on top of that. And will Canada be able to keep that up, or is Chris just that good?
I think what we may be underestimating here is just how good Russell Wilson was last year. He's pushing, Seattle Seahawks signed Matt Flynn to a big contract, and Russell Wilson's about to win the starting job for them as a rookie. He's really doing well, and I think we're underestimating just how much of an impact he had on that offense last year and how much better he is than who they brought in.
Danny O'Brien, will be solid for him, but Wilson, 33 touchdowns and just four interceptions, and I think all four of those interceptions came against Michigan State. Maybe,
he had a 72% completion rate or something too.
Yeah, he was really good, and that's something that those first few years that they got it rolling with Chris and Tolzien was this remarkably lethal and efficient quarterback. And then all of a sudden Wilson kind of gave them Heisman Trophy level sort of production at that position. So there's a lot on O'Brien. To even duplicate what Tolzien had done in 2009 and 2010 would actually be.
Isn't the Tolzien argument
better
in
than
his
what he's
favor
done?
Though?
Yeah.
Tolzien was nothing, and he's also completed 70% of passes for a hugely efficient yardage. If a Tolzien and a Stocko and these guys can just churn it out, sure, Russell Wilson was better, but.
I think Wilson gave them an explosiveness at that position that you hadn't seen under Tolzien.
Yeah, that's true.
And the Tolzien argument came under a different offensive staff now.
Yeah,
I guess I was making that point earlier.
Yeah.
All right. So that is I think that's the question. It's like the combination of Danny O'Brien and Matt Canada.
Their secondary also is a little concerning.
But who's going to throw it on them? You've got Ohio State, Penn State, Illinois, Indiana, and Purdue in their division.
That's a good point.
come on. Anyway,
Marquise Gray. They play Minnesota. Maybe Marquise Gray will throw on him.
Marquise Gray barely got over 50% completions last year.
I know.
And he's
I know.
A fantastic wide receiver, but not much of a quarterback. Anyway, the last.
Yeah, I just don't know who. I mean,
who's going to do it?
You could come up with a worst case scenario for Wisconsin, and I still think
that
would be enough
division?
To put them in the Big Ten championship game because of the whole Ohio State and Penn State situation.
Well played, Barry Alvarez. Well played. All right, last one. Evil Empire, Ohio State. They'll be better. They've got the Urban Meyer. Braxton Miller is now in an offense that knows what to do with him. I don't know if he'll ever learn to throw, but they're propping his stats up pretty good, and it's kind of scary. What can you do? They've got Simon and Hankins on defense. They're going to start Ryan Shazier. Their linebackers do seem kind of weak. Their secondary is good, but probably not elite. Their offensive line is a problem. They have. It's like Michigan's offensive line, except instead of Michael Schofield at right tackle, they have a converted tight end. So that's probably their big Achilles heel. Also, they don't really have a standout running back. I mean, maybe one of the freshmen will come on, but none of the guys who come back really scare you. And then who knows what they have at wide receiver? I mean, literally, nobody knows, including Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, after Braxton Miller and after their defensive linemen, it has the feel, it has the look of a real anonymous Ohio State team.
I mean, everybody's hyped up on Shazier. Maybe he'll get a lot better, but I don't think it's a coincidence that once he entered the starting lineup, Penn State and Michigan just tore off huge rushing days against them. And he was out of position, he was too aggressive, and that's the stuff you kind of learn, but sometimes you don't.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that far behind enemy line here in Toledo, but people are expecting a 10-win season out of the Buckeyes here in Ohio. I hear a lot of people say that if they don't win 10 games, it would be a disappointing first year for Urban Meyer.
Well, they don't have anybody of note on the non-conference schedule. They have, who do they have?
You're correct. They have Miami of Ohio.
Yeah.
They have Central Florida, which is going to be decent this year, but still Central Florida. Cal out of the Pac-10, but they come to the Horseshoe, and then Alabama Birmingham.
So this isn't
Alabama Birmingham. They're going to play an Alabama school too. Actually, this year, it looks like
probably good not in Dallas, but
it's a remarkably random non-conference schedule.
No, there will be 98,000 people in the 104,000 seat stadium in the Horseshoe for that UAB game, probably. So.
Yeah, I think they'll bounce back. I mean, what happened to them last year was basically having to throw Miller in and having Bowman as their offensive coordinator. It's not like their talent ever dropped off that much. So I don't think they'll spend much time idling at 6-6. I mean, there's going to be transition costs, maybe, but they don't have a bowl game to go to, so who cares?
and that's you know, always the thing when we talk about Ohio State. You know, we're not necessarily comparing Ohio State to Illinois. We're comparing Ohio State to Ohio State when we say, hey, they're kind of anonymous compared to in the past. You know, yeah, they still have more talent than probably everybody in the league. It's just that it's not this drooling, you know, next-level obvious talent that it seemingly had been for, you know, 5 or 6 years there in the middle part of the last decade.
So they're back.
I do think they can you know, what's interesting is that there are, you know, they're not eligible, obviously, to play for the Big Ten title, but sports books, some of them have given odds for who, you know, would win, you know, who'd win the division, you know, in a, you know, with the real standings and everything. So, you know, I mean, Ohio State could technically still, you know, win the division, and they're the betting favorite. I've seen it five times. They're -100 to win the division, where Wisconsin was like +170. So, I mean,
so yeah,
there's, you know, it's not just. You know, people here in my home state of Ohio, there's a lot of people out there that feel that this is the first place team in this division this year.
That's a possibility. I mean, we'll see how well Miller develops. I still think I would give the edge to Wisconsin despite their business.
But by the end of the season, Ohio State may very well be the best team. It just might take a little while.
Maybe.
I mean,
Wisconsin's been really consistent.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I drafted Ace Consin, so you know my thoughts on the Badgers. But,
I got to be honest, I was surprised at those odds. I thought maybe Wisconsin would be -100 and Ohio State would be +170. That game is in Wisconsin this year. You know, I mean, I don't see how people could be so sure that Ohio State would win this division in a season where they have to go to Madison. I mean, you know, the Badgers have been a foil for them, especially up there.
Yeah. All right. So I think we just picked a Wisconsin-Michigan State title game. That's lame. I don't know. Did we?
I don't agree with Michigan State in the title game.
You don't?
I think their offense isn't going to put together enough. I think it's Wisconsin-Michigan.
Good.
Yeah.
Ace, you're a better man than me. I thought we would finish out with some sports writer-y type stupid things to say. So let's take a little break and then come back with that. If there's a goal that everyone remembers, it was back in 072. We all squeezed the stick and we all pulled the trigger. So we're back with sports writery things to say about the upcoming season. First thing I want is your breakout player, Ace.
I'll go with Devin Gardner.
Devin Gardner.
Breaking out at wide receiver over being a relatively ineffective backup quarterback.
How many catches are we talking here?
I wouldn't be surprised to see him record 35 or 40. If he's
35,
really,
that's your breakout player.
The 35 catches for like getting, but those catches having a big impact. I don't think he's going to be a guy who gets 60 or 70 catches, but I think, okay, I'll say maybe 50.
50,
but,
okay.
Do we hear
any more? We're going once?
I think we'll stop at 50 at this
50
point.
50 catches, all right. How many yards? 1,500? 30 yards a catch? That seems reasonable.
30 yards seems about the right range, yeah. No, like 800 to 1,000.
800 to 1,000. All right, wow, we really bid you up there.
Yeah, we really did.
Man. Jamie, breakout player.
Well, he played a lot last year and had a lot of good moments, but I think we can see a little bit more statistically from him. I don't know if you guys will agree with this, but I like Jeremy Gallen to get 50 catches, and I like him to get 1,200 total yards.
Oh, that's nuts.
Punt return.
That doesn't count. Total yards.
Why not?
Return. No, that's
Michigan almost got to a national championship game because of Steve Breston turning kick.
All right, we're in diametric opposition here. So my breakout player is Devin Funchess. I saw this guy at the practice. He is all of 6'5". He has incredibly long arms, and I think he's the exact kind of weapon that Borges has very nice dreams about, and they're going to get him singled up against linebackers, and if he's singled up against a cornerback, he's just going to sky over the dude. I think he gets 30 catches. I think he has the biggest tight end output at Michigan since Benny Joppru.
There you go. Well, you wrote about that on the blog after you either saw the practice, heard about it, and you were talking about Devin being the wideout, but I picked up that Funchess news from you, and I was kind of more excited about that, to be honest with you. So
yeah, and Michigan's all-time tight end receiving record is 1,481 yards, and I think we might see Devin Funchess break that. That's when I'm...
That's a career mark.
That's
right?
A career mark, okay. Yes. That's Mandich's career mark, yes. All right, the biggest concern you have for the upcoming season, Ace?
It's got to be the defensive line, and I think...
All right, more specific.
Specifically, if they're planning to move forward with Jabril Black at defensive tackle, which it looks like they're now kind of scrapping that plan, that's a huge concern, but then the concern immediately moves to how well Quentin Washington can hold up as the nose tackle.
And how well most Black important. Can rush at 280.
Yes, and so getting a pass rush in there is a concern if Black is lining up at defensive end and stopping the run all of a sudden becomes a huge concern if Black's down at 3-tech.
All right, Jamie.
Depth on the offensive line, to be honest with you. I think that we definitely have concerns on the defensive line, but I really trust the coaches, and I like what we can do there. But if there's any injuries, what's the plan B for this offensive line? The secondary a couple years ago looked okay on paper, but what was the plan B if injuries ever happened, and then, boom, it all just started to go away? If injuries start hitting this offensive line right off the bat, well, what exactly is the plan B, and where do they go?
The plan
I'm
B
a little concerned
is
about that.
Panic. That is
exactly
panic. All right, my biggest concern is third down defense. So this is somewhat related to Aces, but they were outstanding last year. They were almost as good as the 2006 defense was at stopping third and short. And now you don't have Martin, you don't have Van Bergen, you don't have Heinegger. If you can't stop those third and shorts, then you're losing probably the top reason that your defense had that rebound from last year. So that's a huge swing whenever you get that third and one. That's like a turnover, basically. And they did it 2/3 of the time last year. And that was up from 20% of the time the last 2 years. So that's a huge swing, and it seems like it's going to swing back.
It'll be interesting to see just how far that does swing back. It's got to swing back somewhat. And if they can keep it from swinging back all the way, they could be cooking with fire, But if it... if it's back to being if they just can't stop anybody in those situations, then I don't know what it's going to look like.
Yeah. All right. Thing that might be a problem but won't actually be a problem, or pleasant surprise, I think is a better way to say that.
So this is something that people are thinking it's going to be a problem, but no worries.
Right. We'll deal.
Okay. All right. All right.
I would say it's that left guard spot. You mentioned it earlier, but Michigan's going to be able to plug in somebody who will be at least solid, whether it's L.A. Miller, who's a fifth-year senior, who should have the experience and the strength to at least hold up in there, or it's Kalis, who's a five-star and college-ready, someone will be able to step in. Now, if they have multiple injuries, that all of a sudden becomes the biggest concern, but I think whoever steps in at left guard opening day should at least be all right, and with the rest of the offensive line, that should make for a pretty solid starting unit.
Okay. Ace. Not Ace. You're Ace.
I am Ace.
Jamie.
Me. I think that the ability to harass the quarterback and get to the quarterback. I think Michigan will still be able to do that despite the changes, despite the transition on the defensive line. They might not be as stout against the run. They might not be as disruptive in the run game, et cetera, but I still think that in year two of Madison, this defense as a whole is going to get after the quarterback better than people think without Mike Martin and Ryan Vanberg.
I'm actually going to say tight end. I know this is related to the Devin Funchess thing, but it's not just Funchess. They also have A.J. Williams, who was a tackle last year. He's 285 pounds. Huge for a tight end, no matter how old you are. So between those two guys, they have an inline blocker and they have a receiver, and you'd really like to have that in one guy, but I think they'll be okay there. It won't be as much of a disaster as people are fearing it might be. And then you also have Stephen Hopkins, who gives you the option of maybe downplaying that position and going a lot of three wide with two backs. So I don't think that tight end is going to be a huge drag on the offense. All right, prediction. We need a overall record, a conference record, and a bowl destination from Ace.
Okay, I've got 9-3 written down, and I'm deciding. I can't decide whether it's 6-2 or 7-1 in conference because I think Michigan will lose to either Michigan State or Notre Dame is going to be better than I think they're going to be.
Okay,
and I think one of those trips Michigan up, and then I've got Alabama as a loss, and unfortunately Ohio State heading down there as
you
a loss.
You son of a...
I know.
You're just.
I mean, I have to pick. You know, I'm picking three losses because I think this
is
going
on your permanent record.
And I think that's I think they'll end up at 9-3. But I could, if I had to choose whether they'll end up, whether it's more likely that they're 10-2 or 8-4, I'd actually go with 10-2.
All right.
Either Michigan could easily beat Ohio State and both Michigan State and Notre Dame.
Jamie,
you know, I'm going to go. I'm going to go 9-3, and I'm going to say that they go into Columbus with the division on the line if they win, and then it's up to if they lose, it's up to how the tiebreakers fall. But I'll go 9-3, and I'll go 7-1, and I'll put him in the Big Ten title game just to give some little bit more optimism to what I was saying earlier.
That's still a Notre Dame loss. I can't disagree with you guys. I figure 9-3. I figure Notre Dame is close to a coin flip, and they'll probably lose to Michigan State, maybe Nebraska. We could have our season ruined by Northwestern, and Ohio State obviously looms. So I don't know who they're going to lose to, but I agree with you, and they'll probably end up in the citrus.
Yet I got a mark on my permanent record for my prediction.
Well, I said they
just because I made a specific Ohio State loss prediction.
It's good to be the boss.
That is true.
All right, thank you, Jamie.
I gotta say, I am now way looking forward to this Devin Funchess show. I can't wait.
Funchess.
Can he get to that 1500? Can he get to that mark in 3 years, Brian?
Well,
before he turns pro. can he?
It's only 500 yards a year. It's not even that much, you know?
Like, yeah, yeah.
So I was shocked that it was that low. When you look at Michigan's tight ends, none of them get to play right away. So that's I don't think it'll be better than Jim Mann.
How many years did Tooman start? I would have thought.
I think it was only two.
Okay.
I think Koger, after his first 2 years, was actually kind of a threat to that number.
He was, but, you know.
I didn't think he was going to break it, but if you looked at his numbers and were like, wow, two more years, a little improved, you know. So, I mean, yeah, it's not a
huge number, but it's a pretty
number.
Impressive.
Do we know what
predict.
number is he this year?
Funchess, he's 19. So
19, that's easy. That'll be
that's gonna be a jarring transition from Kelvin Grady to Devin Funchess, like the smallest possible wide receiver to the largest. All right,
well,
so
keep an eye out for him. I'm actually gonna be at the game next week, so hopefully he comes up big
in the red zone. Well, don't fall asleep in a fast food restaurant. That's my advice. Is it the thing Anyway, thank you, Jamie, for coming on. We'll have you on next week. Hopefully talking about a win, but probably not.
Thank you for listening to the MGO podcast. I'm Ace Anbender, and I survived the 2012 kickoff crisis.
The game is over.